Hey everybody, Sean Hammond with PremierGuitar.com. We are in Des Moines, Iowa with Jake Snyder from Minus the Bear, and he's showing us his whole rig here. We're looking at his pedal board first. And Jake, what you got going on here?
Now, basically, it's a pretty simple setup. I've got distortion, a phaser boost pedal, delay, and two Line 6 DL4s that I use for sampling parts and looping. The basic clean sound is just kind of a neck pickup, kind of basic, kind of a quick slapback delay with the Vox Delay Lab. And then a lot of times I have to have this kind of delay, just like a more modulated tape style delay. Really dig the grain screamer for distortion, just kind of like a tube screamer in 808 style thing.
Yeah, I've used that in the studio on bass. It sounds really good.
Really great, true bypass, and pretty good stuff. And this old thing, the Musitronics Phasor, I think it's called. It's just a really nice, old, rich, thick phaser that I love to use. So yeah, that old phaser is amazing. It's kind of my favorite pedal.
Is that a pretty new acquisition?
I've had it for about 5 years. I actually got it when we were doing Planet of Ice, I think. So.
But what about the blue box down here, the mysterious thing that just says Vol on it, I think?
This is a nice clean boost that a friend of our drummer made. Just gives it a really nice boost that, yeah, might have been a little too loud. And it retains this boost. Some boosts kind of make things quack out and kind of get a little, you know, harsh. And this pretty much retains all the bandwidth. And I don't know why it's such a nice one. It's good with the Vox amp too. It's cool.
Now, is this just a volume pedal over here, Ernie Ball?
Just a volume pedal. I basically use that to mute stuff if I'm going to sample a part that I'm going to play in a song, but I can't sample it during the song. So sometimes between songs, I'll sample something real quick with the volume off.
Now, of course, the Line 6 DL4 delay modelers are pretty much synonymous with Minus the Bear, and yeah. Dave is super famous for his sampling techniques. Were you into these before Dave got into that area, or did he sort of drag you along for the ride?
Well, he started playing with these toys, and I kind of, being the jealous kid I am, I wanted to play too, so had to get a couple of them and start doing some sample stuff. Like the song The Fix, it's just, you do a little, double time it so that it's an octave higher, and it's, so.
And Dave,
those kind of things.
Now, Dave, when we did our feature with Dave back in our November issue, we brought you guys some copies of that, by the way. Mm-hmm. But Dave is sort of famous for, there are other samplers on the market, but he, at the beginning of each song, he's constructing his samples for that song. Is it sort of the same way for you, like the randomness of doing it on the fly instead of having it saved in there?
Yeah, and basically the only reason that I don't have samples saved is because I don't own any gear that does that. So you lose the samples anytime a piece of, like, a Line 6 gets the power plug pulled on it. So it's really tough to save stuff and have it do all the stuff specifically that it does, like the and reverse, and it just does stuff that most other pedals don't do.
So sort of the eccentricities of the DL4 are
part of
your sound,
into the music now. Yeah, at this point somewhat.
Let's talk about your guitars now. You're recently into Ibanez models, although in the past you've played Gibsons and Gretches and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've always had a fairly eclectic collection. but then met with Ibanez while we were on our last tour, and they brought a couple of these Rodecore guitars out that were the production models, I think, and they were pretty interesting. So he told me about this specific guitar that's kind of modeled after a hot-rodded 52 Tele in a way. It's a different wood than they usually use on those Rodecores. They're all mahogany, and this is an ash and maple neck, maple fretboard, and mini Duncan humbucker, which I like minis quite a bit. So,
is that stock on it, or did you have the pickup swapped out? Or
that was stock. Yeah, this is what they had put together, luckily for me. And then once I got the guitar, it was just a really good fit. Like, fit my hands well. The neck is awesome. And the intonation is just impeccable. Setup's great.
Do you know what the bridge pickup is?
It's a Duncan as well. I don't know the model, though.
How would you contrast it with the Teles that you already own?
It's a little tighter sounding. It's like the neck pickup, which I use almost entirely, being a mini humbucker compared to the regular Tele single coil, just gives it a little more bite, a little bit more like higher end texture, and it's pretty cool.
Looks like the neck profile may be a little bit more of a like D or C shape than a vintage Tele neck.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a soft C, it feels like, somewhat, but it's a bit fatter than most of the Ibanez guitars I've played. It's definitely not like a shredder neck. It's more classic feel. So
now you have another Ibanez that's different. I think it's maybe, if I remember right, it's kind of the same body shape. We'll take a look in a second, but it's got P90s, I think.
Yeah, P90s, and that's the mahogany body. It's kind of a double-bound black guitar, the rosewood fretboard. So quite a bit different than this one. Tends towards more of a Les Paul Jr.-y kind of sound.
So, Jake, we noticed that you've got your selector switch on this guitar and on the other one taped in a specific position. Is it the bridge pickup or
the neck pickup? I always use the neck pickup almost 100% of the time. And on these guitars, it just happens to be in my strumming path. So, live, I just end up, if I don't have the tape on there, it could be very varying tone throughout the strumming process. It just goes back and forth. So
cool.
Sometimes on the Gretsch, I'll use both pickups just because with the Filtertrons, it's kind of a nice chimey and kind of throaty sound. It's cool. It's a 90s Japanese made roundup, kind of like basically a ProJet with the humbucker Filtertrons instead of like the single coils that the real roundups would have. But yeah.
Which songs are you playing the Gretsch on these days?
I'm playing the Gretsch on, I think it's Secret. What am I playing the Gretsch on there, Booters? Yeah, five guitar. Let's Play Guitar in a Five Guitar Band and Throwing Shapes.
Thanks, Booters. That's the tech for all you guys, right? All right, Jake, so you've been using Vox AC30s for the last couple years now?
Yep. Yeah, a year and a half or 2 years. Started kind of playing them in Europe as rentals, actually. And then wanted to get one at home. So I tried out the hand-wired one, but the lead time on getting one of those was too long. And the tour was coming up pretty quick. So I just got the regular standard AC30. This one's got Elnico Blues in it. It just sounds great. Sounds good to me.
And you prefer the top boost channel, it's looking like?
In the normal channel.
Oh.
Yeah, I go for kind of the simplicity of that circuit and the cleanliness of it. Mm-hmm. It's just volume, tone cut, and another volume. And gives me a little bit cleaner tone, clean tone than a top boost would, for sure. So, cool. But still nice and chimey. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to show us your gear. We're going to chat with Dave and Corey now, but have a good show.
Thanks very much.
We're talking to Dave Knudsen from Minus the Bear, famous for his amazing looping technique with four DL4s from Line 6.
Yeah, it's these two are generally used for sampling only. This one I use for delay and sampling, and then this one is only for delay. So, like, for this set, for instance, the second song we play is The Fix, which I think Jake was showing you how we do the sample for that. So that'll be stored up here. And then in these two, I'll have the samples for Nights stored, because that's, I think, the fourth or fifth song of the set. So it's always easier if I can record the samples after sound check, leave the board on. Mm-hmm. And then for some of the samples, it's just so much easier to have them already in here, especially the Night sample. I can show you that one, which takes a little longer than I want it to live. So that's why if I can sample it before the show, it's better. Gets a little more involved in terms of, you know, I have to sample only a snippet of the chord that I'm playing.
Do you have to do like Achilles workouts before the show, or happens every time you guys play?
I think my Achilles have been worn in pretty well. So, and then there's other samples like Pachuca, which actually are sampled during the song. So when the bridge comes back in on Pachuca, I'm generally going, my bridge part is. So that Pachuca sample actually gets sampled during the song as opposed to before the song, which if I can do it that way is obviously preferable than having to spend time before the song to set up the samples. But so then once I play that part twice, then the second time is when I sample it. The third and the fourth time it's playing off the sampler, and that allows me to change settings for other delays. And then when it goes into the outro, simply kick off the... recorded at half speed, kick it up to regular speed, and then it's the high chirpy version. And then you can do that kind of stuff, and sometimes we do the old backwards trick. Couple different variations.
So you said there are like two songs that you do the samples during sound check or whatever before the show, but on a lot of the songs you're creating the samples or the loops like during the intro or right before,
part of the song during the bridge, during an intro, something like that. And then there's other songs to get even more deep into the sampling. These loop stations, these are for samples that are really hard to recreate, and they're just stored in here because all the line six stuff you have to do live because it doesn't have a memory. Right. So for example, like Into the Mirror, I have it stored just as a one shot sample, setting one, and then that's just, I don't have to sample anything for that, so that makes it super easy. And then on songs like Tosca, this is where it gets more confusing, because I'm actually hitting two samples at once and then affecting the delay modulation while it's happening. So for that song, I put my knobs like that on the DL4, and then when the outro comes in, and so I'm affecting, so there's sampling going on, but then I'm also affecting the way that the delay is modulating by turning the tweak knob on the DL4.
Cool. So. Now, the loop stations are relatively new for you over the last year or two or something, if I remember right?
Yeah, I had one RC2 for a while that had the End of the Mirror sample in it, and then for this record, there were a couple songs like Tosca where it was just going to be impossible to especially create like this sample here. So it was just easier to throw it in this, you know, loop station with the memory and just trigger it like that. The only problem with these is that you can't do the re-triggering of something easily, which is an effect that I like to use a lot, you know, whether it's something like A lot of times you can, by stuttering the sample like that, you can get a cool, you know, rhythmic riff out of it. And with these, you can't really re-trigger it like that. So even though I have all these sampler pedals, they're not quite perfect yet.
how many DL4s have you owned in your life?
Quite a few. I mean, Line 6 is nice enough to send out replacements, and, you know, because a lot of times with that much re-triggering and, you know, hammering on the buttons so hard, stomping on them, you know, stuff breaks, or especially if you're playing a really hot club that's humid, sometimes the moisture will turn the pedals off, and you'll, like, the sample will go away in the middle of the show, and then it's kind of like, oh.
Cool. Is there anything else in your sort of overall looping technique you want to demonstrate, or should we move on to the rest of the pedal board?
I mean, that's kind of the majority of what I've been doing. I mean, there's other songs like White Mystery where, sorry, let me get over here. So White Mystery is a really fun one, actually, because I get to sample just while the verse is being played. So for that... And then sample that at halftime, so it sounds. And then there's one other sample, so there's two samples happening. I haven't played this song in a while, sorry. So my part alternates between. And that's the song that has the real big sort of sample solo in it where stuff's going backwards and forwards and
down there.
And I'm, yeah, exactly. So that's a pretty fun one.
Cool. Let's look at the rest of the pedal board, and sure. You can tell us your favorites. I know we're almost out of time and we want to talk to Corey too, but
sure.
Let's talk about your other pedals and your guitars.
So as you can see, I mentioned it before maybe, but you know, there's a ton of stuff on here. I do have a Electro-Harmonix Hog that I love bringing out on tour, but it just takes up so much room because it is on a separate board where your foot is, and it has, you know, the expression pedal, the Hog controller, and then the preset thing. So it's like three, you know, pretty huge pedals for only one or two sounds. So I've been using this M5 to kind of recreate some of those sounds, some of the hoggier stuff, like the using the Smart Harmony. So that's been a nice space saver, even though I would obviously prefer to have the Hog just because it has its, you know, own awesome characteristics. This Box of Rock is probably, I mean, of non-sampling pedals is my favorite pedal. I mean, I just love the clean boost and the way it adds sparkle to both my amps. And then, you know, you put on the fuzz and it just gets filthy for songs like Secret Country or Steel and Blood or any of that. And then the tone press, I've been using a tone press for, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 years, and that really brings out a lot of the... Well, these strings are kind of dead, but... It just helps even out all the tapping, because sometimes the tapping's a little lower strings or quieter and some other notes pop out, so it's just a nice even leveler for everything.
So you're using it almost in a compressor type of way, even though you also use a Boss compressor?
The Boss compressor, actually, I don't even use for compressing. I just use it to cut the signal, so that, like we were talking about, if I do have to like set up a sample before, during the show, before a song starts, I'll hit this so that it's not full volume for my amp going out to the front of house and people are like, they're doing that song next or whatever. So it just lowers the volume a little bit. But I'm actually, this is never on when I'm playing. This is the tone press is the compressor of choice.
Just so you can barely hear it enough to make the loop.
Exactly.
And then.
So I can hear enough of it to where I can, you know that it's in time or that I've played it correctly. But going to front of house, it's, you know, a much lower signal. So hopefully people don't, I'm sure some people can still hear it, but it's not as obvious and annoying as me sitting up here.
It's kind of intriguing too, actually. Like when I saw you guys, yeah, I could hear you doing it. I was like, oh, that's kind of.
Otherwise, you know, Jake or Alex might be talking to the crowd, or you know, yeah. And then you have me over here making a bunch of awkward noise. So.
Let's talk about your guitars now. You got a PRS here.
Yeah, Custom 24. I've had this for a few years. They were nice enough to give it to me about 3 years ago. I just love the PRS's. Just the neck, super fast, plays great, low action for the tapping. I've started using the coil tap a ton, which is how the sound for Steel and Blood is created. Is normally, you know, I'm, you know, just pretty much on the bridge and sometimes. Or the neck and sometimes the bridge, but putting that in there and doing the coil tap really adds. It just adds a little more noisy, like, you know, just noisy grit to some of the songs that, you know, aren't meant to be so pristine and right. Chimey. Okay. So.
All right. Next up is another PRS. This is a. What is this one?
This is a McCarty, Gold Top McCarty. I bought this probably 6 months before the band started, at a shop called Al's Guitarville in Seattle, and it was my first PRS I've ever had. I was lusting after them for years and years, and then when this band started, it was. I was like, I want to write all this music on a new guitar that I've never played before and all that. So went and picked this up, and this has been kind of my baby forever. This has been
all stock still?
It's all stock, yeah. The frets have been replaced. I sent it back to PRS last year, and they refretted it for me and changed out the electronics just because they were kind of, you know, after
sweat and humidity and everything.
Abuse and all that. Yeah. So, but all the pickups are stock, and yeah, it's just amazing.
No, you haven't had this one modified to be able to split the coils or anything,
no,
have you?
It is a coil splitter too. Okay. But that was stock on an option as well, even though I didn't use that option for I don't know how long. Okay. I mean, until just a couple years ago.
So next up, you got a Fender.
Fender Jaguar Baritone. So this is just, you know, this is only on one song called Secret Country, and it's just the fact of adding the low B string just makes it sound so super heavy, and it just adds a really cool groove to the song.
And you're tuning it B to B then? Standard tuning?
Yeah, so it's standard baritone tuning. And then this through the Box of Rock, again, with both the fuzz element and the boost, just really...
It's really girthy.
Yeah, it just sounds enormous, especially for the outro.
And you prefer the bridge pickup on,
yeah,
on that?
Yeah, especially for Secret Country. I have been writing some other stuff with a neck pickup that's a little more, you know, not as messy sounding, I suppose, you know, a little more clean.
Yeah.
And it sounds great for that, too. It's just, you know, moving anything. It's so funny, too, just like playing some of our other songs on this guitar, you know, that many steps lower, it just makes everything sound so crazy. And sometimes it's cool, and other times it's like, oh, that's just mush.
Yeah, so sometimes, kind of usually when you write a song on that guitar, it only sounds good on that guitar,
exactly.
And then you try and transpose it.
Yeah. So sometimes it's kind of an interesting experiment to play, you know, songs that were meant to be played in E or D on here and see how they sound. But a lot of times that ends in embarrassment.
Okay, so. Acoustics in the show, that's kind of new, right? I don't remember you guys playing acoustic last time I saw you, but so what you got here?
So this is an Ibanez that they sent out for me. I've only played it at one show because we've only played the song Listing once, and so we're adding it to the set for this tour off the new record. And that's, it's the kind of poppy number that is all acoustic. I tried doing it on a PRS with the coil split, but it just sounded terrible. It didn't have like the full natural acoustic sound or whatever. So this, you know, is coming out of here into a DI. Sounds great, and it is kind of weird for me to be playing an acoustic guitar on stage, but it's you know, sometimes a nice change.
So you've been using a dual amp rig for a while now, right?
Yeah, for a couple years, and they're both on all the time. It's not in stereo, which I know sounds kind of weird, but there are some songs where the stereo-ness and ping-ponging and stuff happen on the record, and so I'm kind of in the process of routing these so that they're stereo. It just sounds different than what I'm used to. Mm-hmm. So so that will be happening soon, and that'll sound great for like the effect at the end of Tosca that I was showing, where I was manipulating the delay on the DL4 while the samples were going on.
So you've got a Mesa Lone Star. Which one is this?
This is the 2x12, just the regular Lone Star.
Which tubes are you using in it?
These are the 606s. I'm running it on 50 watts, though, instead of the 100, just because 100 gets a little loud, especially with two amps and a twin that's always loud. So we got these amps right before the Planet of Ice record came out, which is why we used to all have white Mesa amps, because we're like, oh, Planet of Ice, so let's make all of our amps white. And Aaron was playing like a clear drum set, and so it actually was kind of cool. This has the nice mid-range beefiness of the tone that I love, and then the twin is really my main workhorse, just because it's so chimey. It has the full-bodied response, but it has like the upper harmonics that really help the tapping shine through and help with some of the sparkly end of the sampling when it goes double time and the samples get in the higher register.
Now you've got a pair of AB boxes on top of these. You want to talk about what those are for?
The AB boxes, this is merely just splits the signal from, this goes into the Mesa, this goes into the twin, and then this AB box is for my time, the song where I'm playing an omni chord and I'm not playing guitar. So this is a Japanese synthesizer made by Suzuki.
I remember those came out like in the mid 80s, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I got it on eBay. Like, I don't even know if they make them anymore. But yeah, so this just splits between A is my guitar signal, and then B is the omni chord.
Sweet. All right, so we covered the whole rig so far?
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty much the extent of it.
All right, cool. Well, thanks so much, Dave.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to Corey now, I think, if he's around anyway.
All right, no problem, man.
Thanks, man. All right, so last but not least, we're talking to Corey, bassist for Minus the Bear. You've got an awesome-sounding rig. We were just hearing it a second ago. We'll hear it again. Corey, where do you want to start with your rig, though? You want to start with your bass?
Yeah, sure. It's just a, you know, some sort of jazz bass. I don't even know. I'm the technical guy of the group.
How long have you been playing this model?
I just got it, actually. Just started playing it a couple days ago. So kind of break it in.
And you had a black one over there, too. Is that also new?
It's a Jazz Aerodyne bass that I've had for a while that I really actually like that. It's kind of one of those Japanese Aerodyne kind of light basses. So,
what did you like about this one that made you decide to pick it up?
Just something different. It was, you know, these kind of P-style pickups in the jazz formation seemed interesting. So
we actually just reviewed this model, I think.
Really? Yeah. Yeah, feels good. I mean, that was the I wasn't so sure about it when I first got it, but it feels good in the hands. So
which pickups are you leaving on? Usually do you sort of have it in the middle on both?
All of my stuff is just on. Yeah. I just, there's no real reason for knobs as far as I'm concerned. The less knobs for me, the absolute better.
And with the tones all the way up and everything?
Yeah.
You're not using tape like Jake and Dave, though.
Yeah, no, I just, I mean, it was meant to be turned all the way up, so just go for it.
All right, so from there you go into your pedal board here, which is, compared to Jake and Dave's, it's like totally bare bones.
Yeah,
tell us about it.
Again, I just, there's so much going on in this band that I feel like the less that I have going on, kind of the better to fit in with everything. But that said, I go into that Greed Tone pedal, which is just like a overdrive, and that's really about it. The tone from the, you know, Sans amp is great, and I use that as my DI, and that's it. I really don't think I need anything else. There's so much going on this stage.
Do you keep the Sans amp pretty clean then?
A little bit of dirt. I will go back and forth between two channels because it's programmable. So, but yeah, I like a little dirt in it.
Now, what's the brand on this pedal? I didn't the
Greed Tone. A local Seattle guy just builds these little guys out of his house.
What would you compare it to? Is it, and like anything else out there that people are maybe familiar with?
Not really. I mean, I feel like Big Pies or, you know, those things, they just lose so much of the bass.
The low end, yeah.
But this really keeps that, so I'm really happy with it.
And then do you use the volume pedal just pretty much between songs or not? Yeah. You're not like fading in notes so much?
Not too much. Every once in a while, a little bit. But mostly it's just, yeah, kind of a mute.
All right. Well, let's look at the source of the thunder over here. You got a Vrelin. Well, it's really a meat smoke, but
it's a one-off special merch smoke. So it's I really don't want to play with anything else. Ben Vrelin makes a mean amplifier, and it's great. It's there again. Few knobs, and it's really, you can just plug into it, and you're ready to go, which is really awesome. It sounds like bass.
And it's an Ampeg cab.
Yep, just run-of-the-mill 810 that's been around couple years.
Let's hear it, because it sounds amazing. Nice. Thanks, Corey, for showing us your rig. Good luck at the show tonight.
Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah. I'm Sean Hammond with PremierGuitar.com.